If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law that you watch me cover on television every day into the arguably more fun world of theater and the arts, and just a way to get away from it all. And that's why I love doing this broadcast behind the curtain. And joining me today, a good number of the members of the cast of Fat Ham, which when I saw this on opening night, immediately went up to the PR people and went, we have got to do an interview on this show. I love this show so much that I want to thank you all for joining me today for this. This is going to be great. You're all going to get to talk. Let me introduce all of you to everybody. I'm going to start with my good friend because it's just because she's my good friend. Ife Butler, you and I go back a long way. You play Rabbi in this show. By the way, last weekend, I sent my colleague Micah Mater on Saturday night. Did you see Micah? Yeah, she was in my seats, just so you know. But she and her husband, Calvin, they were sitting in the front row, and she texted me right afterwards, and she referenced, she loved the show, but she referenced you, and just, you know, just blown away by your character and how you came across, and that was just so great for her. You and I, of course, go back to you playing Fannie Lou Hamer and in the Nacarima Society, and you were Nun Sets at Kennedy Center, Chicago Shakes, on and on. And even though you were inducted into the Woman in the Arts Museum, I have to say that for me, the performance that beats everything is when you and Felicia Fields get onto a stage together and do your thing. And if you all have not seen them do a show, I don't know if there's anything coming up, but the good news is they cook for the audience. Uh-huh. Am I right? I'm not making that up.
Yeah, we did. We prepared dinner for the entire audience on New Year's Eve. We did a New Year's Eve show. And our gift to all the people that participated is we made like 25 dishes and invited the entire, you know, theater staying with us.
We got some jealous cast members here, so that's good. Trumaine Alston, you played Juicy in this show. Clearly, the show revolves around your character, around a lot of the characters, but your character certainly is one we have to pay close attention to. And what I didn't know about you, this was kind of cool, is that a lot of your background from the world of improv. You were a Bob Curry fellow. I'm actually going tomorrow night to see the current Bob Curry show, and we're going to do a whole special about that fellowship program. But yeah. I just have to briefly ask you the notion of the improv world translating over. I mean, this is a fun show and funny to do, but is that a direct connection for you? Is this a different skill getting exercised?
I think it's a different skill getting exercised. Some of it is there's some overlap for sure. Just being present, being in the moment, things like that all translate. But the endurance and having 8 shows a week, we don't do that in improv usually.
You did actually, depending on your main stage.
Second City main stage, but that's all. Yeah. That's a written show as well. I haven't done that job. I haven't been a part of that stage. But
you will as soon as they see Fat Ham over here. They're going to bring back over that. and Angie White, you play Tedra, mom, in this show, and also your debut with Goodman, which just you fit in so well. I was almost surprised to read that it was a debut, but I know I've seen you at Court and Timeline, and your character is just priceless in this show. I just think it's just amazing. So and do you find, by the way, working at the Goodman, since this is a debut for you, any a little different than folks over at Court and Timeline, or is theater
but it was bigger? That's what I would say. So it was vocally and physically more demanding because it wasn't as intimate as I'm used to, which was funny. So
all right. And Sheldon Brown, you play Larry. We're going to talk about your character in a little bit. But this is also your Goodman debut. A bit surprising to me because you've done so many other things. I saw you in Choir Boy at Steppenwolf, which was just such an incredible and amazing show. You've got Shakespeare in your background, I know, with Othello and Oedipus Rex at the Court Theater. And I saw you Broadway in Chicago's Visit with a Soldier's Play. Too bad they couldn't get any good actors to star in that show. I mean, like Norm Lewis and, you know, Denzel Washington on Broadway. Just guess nobody good wanted to take that, that show on. But congratulations to you. That was just that was also just an amazing feat. And Choir Boy, really amazing stuff.
Thank you.
So, and in this show, this show presents a character with just, I just feel that character and just the tensions that go in. But let's explain to people what's going on in this show. So Trumaine, Fat Ham, first of all, it is a play on Hamlet. It is, well, on Hamlet, but on Shakespeare. I actually have this theater, and as an improv guy, you'd appreciate this. I think if somebody could teach Shakespeare in the Fat Ham way, I mean, all of Shakespeare in the Fat Ham way to young people, I think Shakespeare would get a lot more fans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Using the language that we speak, absolutely.
And making it work. Trumaine, tell us a little bit about just the plot of this show for folks who aren't, I mean, it's not Hamlet, but it is certainly based on that.
Yeah, well, I'm trying not to spoil anything.
I won't spoil, I have to tell you, I don't spoil anything. I let you all give out secrets because one time, Faye, you'll appreciate this. I was interviewing the cast of Dear Evan Hansen, and I said at the beginning, is there anything you don't want me to say? And somebody said, don't say Connor dies. I'm like, he dies in the first 5 seconds of the show. Why are we keeping? But I learned a lesson, which is, okay, secrets are yours to keep. So Trumaine, up to you.
All right. Well, it does follow the trajectory of Hamlet. The circumstances are very similar. Jussi's father has passed away, was murdered? Is that a secret? Was murdered by his uncle. We learned that he was murdered by his uncle, and he's now tasked by
that we didn't know
of his father to seek revenge. So the whole thing is Jussi grappling with the task at hand, which is to kill his uncle, or to how to navigate that circumstance.
And Angie, your role is Tedra. I mean, in some ways, I think Tedra's kind of in her own space, in her mind, doing her thing, living her life, and everything else just kind of complicates it. But talk a little bit about Tedra, and it's so fabulous the way when Tedra enters onto that stage. It's so great.
So it's so funny that you're saying Tedra, because I remember the first week of rehearsal, we were like, Tedra, Tedra, Tedra. And we was like, oh, it's Tedra. So
I'm goofing it up.
You're fine.
Correct it right there and go with Tedra.
But yes, Tedra is, as in the script says, a kind of Gertrude. She is Jussi's mother. She's a good mother. And I feel like where we're meeting her is one of the highest moments of her life. She is just been remarried to her brother-in-law, Rev, and they are in the celebratory moment. And I feel like she is the life of the party, and she is trying to hold that up as much as possible. But of course, as we get through the day, things go awry, and she has to confront some things and make a transformation by making a crucial decision for her life as well as her son's.
And Ife, let me come to you. When you walk on any stage, the walls just blow away. There's no question. When you're on that stage, people are going, is Ife in the show? Yeah, Ife's in the show.
That's because I'm loud. That's right.
But you are so present. Talk about Rabbi. And I do have a specific question I'll have to ask you that only people who saw the show will appreciate. But talk about your character.
I think she's a good friend. She's the best friend of Tedra's, and she has two children that she loves dearly, and she finds out secrets about her children in the course of this play. And I think she's kind of like the busybody neighbor that we all know in our neighborhood. She's everybody's auntie that when you see her coming, you go, oh my God, what is she going to say? What is she going to do? What is she going to be wearing? You just don't know with Rabbi what's going to happen from one second to another. So you just kind of hold on and pray that it's not you that she's coming after. And that maybe she'll calm down. You know, she's a lot of things. She's got everything going on at once. She's very monochromatic. Whatever she does, it's all in or all out. So, you know, she's one of those characters that we all know. I don't care where you live. We've all got an aunt, a cousin, a sister, a friend like Rabbi. And sometimes we wish she wasn't there, but she's always going to be there.
I kind of wanted to introduce you as Aunt Rabbi, because that really is kind of the way we feel about it. You're like that aunt who's stealing the sweet and low off the table in the restaurant.
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. She's always got a bag, and we don't know what's going to be in the bag and what she might pull out of the bag or what she might put in the bag.
Exactly.
She's always got something going on. It's something happening when Rabbi's around.
So here's the question I have for you that only people who saw the show will appreciate, but go see the show if you can't answer this question. The show plays through March 9th. On March 10th or afterwards, will you ever eat a rib again?
Just look at that. The best part of this is Memorial Day isn't until May. So might have enough time. But right now, I don't want to see nope. I don't want to see Rhea. Not right about now.
I did ask, I asked the PR team if I could come in on March 10th and take home the leftovers. So
We
the
will
answer
not
was you're not
fight
the only one that wants them.
you.
And Sheldon, I've seen you do some serious stuff, and your character, this show plays certainly as a comedy, a lot of comedic aspects. But your character in this show of Larry is just it's got some deep moments to him, not the least of which is that you show up and you are in your military uniform, which becomes so crucial. Again, I'm not going to give any secrets away. We'll let Jermaine do that. But talk to me, Sheldon, about the role of Larry. And is this a tough role for you to play, or is it again, you've done so many incredible dramatic things, the next role?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's always fun to be the straight man in the play where everyone's wacky and goofy, and my character is a little bit more a little bit more somber in comparison to the rest of the characters. It's Larry is comes into the show. He's Juicy's good old friend. He's a kind of Laertes if you're familiar with Hamlet. He comes in full military regalia, and it's been a long time since him and Juicy have encountered one another. And so he's coming in as this they're new changed people as now they're coming into adulthood. And he's reconciling the history that the two of them have shared, and his coming to terms with who he is as a person, who he's growing into. So there's a journey that he has to go on and trying to figure out who he is in context to the other characters that are on stage, whether it be his sister and his mother and his friend who's now different and changed, and he's trying to put all those pieces together on how to carry himself as a man. So it is a really amazing journey that Larry goes on, and the arc of his character is a wonderful and beautiful privilege to play. Any role I've done is it's difficult, and because you have to explore parts of yourself that feel familiar, and you explore parts of yourself that maybe is unrecognizable to you. And so within Larry's trajectory and his arc in the show, there's some things in Larry that I resonate with very deeply, and there's some things that Larry finds that I, as Sheldon, have never encountered in my life. So it's been a treat. It's been a lot of fun to do.
And I know you all probably have, Shakespeare and whatever's in your background because it's so prevalent in your bio with Othello and Oedipus Rex. When you do a show like this, Sheldon, do you sort of go, oh, Shakespeare would be rolling over in his grave? Or do you sort of like, no, we're just going to do what we're doing?
Not at all. I hope Shakespeare would be like
Probably get a
celebrating
kick out of
some
it.
work like this. It's great to take work that connects us to our past. And this show is Hamlet in general is about connecting to past, connecting to legacy. You have the main character who's connecting to his father. And as audiences are watching our show, they're connecting to the history from the past and our own personal histories that we may be experiencing as people. So any great art that goes into the world, if it's great art, it continues to live and evolve. And it teaches us new things, and more people can add new voices and new experiences and new cultural elements to it that I think makes the work even more rich. So I think he would be very happy about it,
Yeah,
hopefully.
that's why I said if we could teach a whole course this way with all Shakespeare, there'd be a lot of new people getting into it. Trumaine, look, I'm not going to give anything away here. I don't think I am because I think this is when people describe the show, when Goodman describes the show, they will say that this is, first of all, Southern cookout, so that explains where we are. But they say, look, this is about Black queer discovery, but it's about resilience. Talk to me about your character, Juicy, where he starts in this show and where he ends up. He goes through some weird things in this show that are going on, but we also see incredible character growth in this show for Juicy. Or maybe it's a defiance. I don't, what is it?
I think Juicy knows who he is to some extent. I think there's the challenges of like what classical like black masculinity is, and being pushed up against that throughout the show. Let me take a second. I don't know. I think there are a lot of like outside forces that are challenging his perception of self and who he is able to be. It's the challenge of like preservation of the softness of self, right? I feel like I'm just saying words. I have no idea.
Well, let's bring Mama into this.
And, absolutely. Thanks, Mom.
So, Tidra, because you learn an awful lot about these kids all over the place in the show. But Tidra, once again, maybe it's why I said what I did up front. You can disagree. But this notion of Tidra's got her own things going on. And so these other realizations that Tidra has throughout the course of the show almost seem secondary to her mastering her own life. Mm-hmm. Fair or not fair? What do you think?
I would say yes. And I think when you see Tidra in that light of her having her own thing and really focused on self, you know, people on the outside can, because I get, when I come off the stage, I'll be hearing some, I get a lot of that. And I'm like, ooh, they don't like Tidra, or they have pity on Tidra. They think Tidra is selfish. But really, for me, as stepping into the skin of Tidra, it's like she's a survivor. That is important to her. And the fact that she has built this empire, this kingdom, if we want to go back to Shakespeare, it's been a crack in the foundation for her when her husband went off to prison. So things have been going downhill for her. But then you have a new love in her life, and here's a new opportunity. And this is something familiar to her. And it's also too holding on to the traditions and ideas that she's herself have inherited and has been passed down to her. Like, okay, this is how I can rebuild the empire, right? And so that's what this moment is. This is a celebration. This is not for her. She's grieved already. And that's what I don't think people get, is that Tidra has gone through the grieving process, which is why she can move on so fast, because she already lost her husband when he was incarcerated. And then adding on to that, he was murdered. But the thing that people don't know, that we all have our secrets, right? And so I think that was her way of telling Juicy, is that me and Rev had a relationship before your father died, and we fell in love. And this is how the timeline, you know, this is how this all makes sense. These are the things that we discovered when doing the table work, when having all these conversations, we're doing our backstory, is that Rev has always been in Tidra's life. But here's a moment where they can actually be together. And I think she truly believes that this will be different until she finds out he is the same apple from the same tree. And putting her son through that again, she could actually lose her son.
So well put. You know, I wish I would have mentioned that in my review, which was fabulous, of this show. But you just said something that I hadn't thought about. The notion that Tidra had grieved. Because for me, I pushed those events closer together. A kind of out with dad and in with uncle, you know, kind of a thing. And you're right, that a grieving process had already taken place, which adds a lot of depth to that character that I hadn't thought about before. So that's important. Ife, everybody presents, you know, when you think of so many of the roles, and I'm going back to Fannie Lou Hamer and stuff, you present the black experience in so many different important ways throughout your career. In this show, this character, as you say, Rabbi, is lighter and all of that, but talk about her role in the black experience that she presents, Rabbi presents, in this interaction, given the fact that in so many ways she's in her own world. She gets lots, she's learning a lot of things too during the course of the show, and you get this feeling she's like, I can't believe I'm hearing this, but give me a rib.
Yeah, right. I think that what Rabbi is trying to do is hold on to and create a life that she knows is not there. And I think part of that in a black experience sometimes can be church. And I think her big shield is the church. And so she puts her armor on, and going to church is her armor. She knows there are things that are strange in her family. She knows that her children are not exactly, as many of us do, exactly what we want them to be. But if she can hold on to the idea of what they should be and what she has in her mind that they should be, then she's going to be okay. So she's going to pray her way through this, through life. You know what I mean? It's her shield. I think it's her armor. And I think that's why for me as an artist doing this play, it's a coming of age for every single character on this stage. Every single character, regardless of where their age, and this is a great generational things going on that stage. But everybody is having to grapple with where they are right now in this moment in life and the decisions they have to make. There's not a character that stands on that stage that at the end of this doesn't have to, because we're resilient as a people, but we still have to make some hard decisions. And we have to know, find our truth. And I think people find their truth during the course of this play. You know, through all the humor, because without comedy, there's no tragedy, and tragedy and comedy. And so that's what makes this show, in my opinion, so brilliant. And James writing so brilliant. And then Tyrone as a director, he gave us such license to be able to be the good human beings that everybody in this cast are. And it makes it a lovely event. But I think we're all going through something. And we're maneuvering that without trying to give away too many secrets. And when everybody comes to that point, and we, every single person does, where they're challenged in front of the group, they have to respond in an honest way. They have no choice.
That's bad. I want to bring up Tyrone Phillips. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. And you're right. The playwright, James I. James, is just, well, no wonder this was a Pulitzer Prize winning play. Tony nominated as well. Sheldon, the relationship between you and your sister in the show, Larry and sister, I found that to be really interesting, because in many ways you all are on different trajectories from each other. One could argue, were they really siblings growing up as siblings? Can you talk a little bit about how you all developed what you viewed your relationship, assuming you all talked about, you know, who were we when we were growing up? What kind of relationship did you and your sister have in the show growing up to take us to the moment we see?
Well, our relationship that I have with my sister is very much deeply connected to our own individual relationships with our mother. And, you know, we have a mother who's very overbearing in many ways, but treats us very differently. And throughout the course of the play, you see a lot of Opal coming into Opal, being Irie Roach, who's coming into herself, who knows who she wants to be, but is fighting against her mother's expectations. And then you have Larry, who is on a journey of discovering who he wants to be, but kind of doesn't fight back as fiercely against his mother as his sister does. And so you have these moments where the mother is, you know, she's like, why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you do this? And there's a little bit of tension, I believe, in that, in which, you know, Larry is trying to be a standout son, trying to be the best of his mother's expectations. And his sister, who has a little bit more fire and a little bit more strength, to saying, you know, that's not what I want to do. But then they have this really beautiful a moment in the play where they see each other. My sister comes to me and says, you understand. And I say, yes, I do. And that sort of journey that I find in myself kind of becomes a catalyst for her to fully embrace herself as well. And so there's this beautiful thing where, you know, because of our generational split in ages and me going off to war and coming back and our relationship with our mother, there is a little bit of tension there. But then there's this, as we both come into ourselves, there's a rekindling of a relationship. There is a strengthening of a bond between brother and sister that happens. So we're all on our individual journeys of trying to figure out how to exist as in the fullness of ourselves around our mother. And then we find that person, and those two people end up becoming a beautiful pair together as they grow. So I think that's what I gained from my relationship with my sister in the show.
I'm going to do one follow-up, and I'm not going to load my sense of the answer to this question, but a follow-up. Why did Larry join the military?
If we're talking about Laertes and the character of Hamlet and its connection with this character of Larry, it is a huge tradition and huge value for some men to join the military, right? It's a thing where you get to represent the highest, most esteemed, most dignified role you can carry in society by joining the military. It offers stability, it offers security, it offers some sort of social ranking in a sense. And also, you know, this is something to please his mom as well, who's very proud of his.
That's where I was going. I get the Shakespeare explanation. Your background would suggest it, but I wondered whether Larry, not Laertes, but Larry, whether this was about relationship with his mom.
Well, you know, it could be that, but I also have lots of friends who join the military for a variety of reasons, right? Some people don't have any sort of sense of what they want to do and end up joining the military at 16, 17, 18 years old. And my father was in the military. My uncles were in the military. So sometimes it does become of a legacy, in a sense. We don't see Larry's father on stage. We don't know what Larry's father it's done, if he's been in the military, regardless of that. But there is a sort of pride that his mother takes in his role in the military and how she wants him to be. She's going to be a general someday, she says. So there is this expectation of, what do I do now with what I have and the experience that I've gained being in combat or witnessing things that has left me traumatized? And how do I carry that with the kind of human being and man that I want to become.
Thank you for that. Jermaine, let me ask you about the impact of Tyrone Phillips, your director, who directed Purpose, by the way, at Steppenwolf. So another amazing show that I hope you all got to see. The relationships that we in the audience feel when you all are on stage, they're so potent. We feel them. We get them. It's been developed, but that just doesn't happen. You know, I'll just show up and make that happen. Jermaine, can you share a little bit about how Tyrone may have worked with you all as a cast ahead of time to create and build those character relationships?
Absolutely. We talked a lot about dialect and how we're speaking to each other, how we speak differently with people in our own age group versus like how we speak to our elders. We had a lot of conversations about like what our relationships were with each other during table work as well. I think also just thinking about what each person wants and what is driving each character, is instrumental in like how we're interacting with each other as well. The things that move us from one point to the next is kind of what our relationship is, you know? Like what we need from each other, what we want from each other, what our expectations are of each other, and how we get to communicate those things. Because there are like restrictions around, it's like, oh, I would never talk to my father or my mother this way, or I would never talk to my friend this way, you know? I think Tyrone put a lot of effort and attention into the interactions between even the small moments in the cast.
Yeah, so important. And Angie, for Tidra, you know, that I think the reason I've said some of the things I've said is when I think of karaoke, when I think of Get the Beer, when I think of all these kind of moments, that's just that to me, I wonder about Tidra's priorities as opposed to seeing what's going on maybe with Juicy, with what's going on right here at home, and whether Tidra just again is looking for the fun, looking for the distractions.
I think it's that. But she again. So when to talk about Tyrone and how he, you know, was able to develop the relationships, I think the fact that he got us together and we all said yes to this thing, that I think we took it upon ourselves to develop the relationships off stage as like, you know, person to person versus the character part of it. But then as for me, as it relates to me, then I, like the first day I met Tremaine, he was already my son and I introduced myself to him as such. I said, I am your mother and I will be from this day forward. And so when we get off the stage, it does not stop. Now in terms of Tidra and choosing to be aware or not aware of what's going on with her son, I think she knows from the riff. I don't know if everybody can catch it, but there are moments what I have where you know, yes, I know there's some tension between us, but I need your approval because this can't go any further unless you're on board with it. And there's this tug of war, and she's right smack dab in the middle of it between these two men who she does not want to lose, but she feels her son, you know, being further and further away from him. And she's still, you know, trying to like, hey, get him involved, you know, get him to participate, you know, for the karaoke. She's like encouraging these things. The charades, it's a great idea. She is, you know, affirming him. Even when she does have this man who she is catering to and trying to keep and maintain, because again, those are her beliefs that she just holds so tightly onto.
And Tremaine, I want to follow up. Ife, I'm going to come back to you in just a second, but that triggered a follow up for me with Tremaine and Juicy. Juicy has his own life he needs to live, that resilience we've talked about already. But it's intriguing to me that Juicy also wants other people of maybe his generation. They need to have their truth be told. Was that difficult in terms of Juicy, in terms of saying, this isn't just about my truth, the rest of you are going to live your truth too, and I'm going to see to it?
Yeah, I think that is a huge question throughout the show that is pretty difficult. And I'm trying so hard to avoid any spoilers whatsoever. But, you know, like, hey, if you're watching this,
they'll forget by the time they go. So go ahead.
I think about there's a line where Juicy says, you know, what is good? And it's like played off as kind of like this just pondering this musing of the situation. Juicy does take somewhat violent actions in assuring that other people live their best lives. It's like the intention behind it is supposedly this positive thing of like helping other people grow into who they are, but I'm not sure what the word is, lost it, but the kind of attitude behind I am the person that is in charge of making sure you live your best life is misguided. It's often misguided. You can't force someone to live the life that they haven't asked to live. You know, people personally in my own life, I think people need to find their own journeys, and people will discover things at the rate that they need to discover them. Sometimes it does take someone like Juicy, who is reckless and shaking things up in that way, to lead people to that point in their lives. But it is a violent act to force that upon people, and it's a selfish act to force that upon people. But it is leaning into the question of, like, especially since these things do affect him as well, how these people so close to him choose to live their lives is affecting his ability to live his own life. It is the crucial thing in the play, which is like, what do we preserve and what do we get rid of in trying to keep that resilience about ourselves?
Yeah, something that the character of Larry questions,
right,
when that happens. Ife, let me come back to you, because for me, your character, and I know you're younger than all of us, but your character represents kind of a generation above us. For me, it made me think of my parents and, you know, as I went through my issues in life and all that kind of stuff, and you expect a certain level of support that in my generation you didn't get, that kind of thing. But so Ife also, sorry, that your character, Ravi, also seems to, she gets hit with all these things, but handles it better than maybe others in your generation, and maybe even in the African-American culture would have handled it in that way. In some ways, I saw Ravi as a step ahead.
Yeah, I think she is. I think she is, because I think she knows, but she just doesn't want to say, you know, as long as you know things, but you don't speak on them, maybe they'll go away. But once they come to fruition, you have to say, okay, and be accepted. Because that's one of the things about this piece that I love. It's about acceptance at whatever age, at whatever level, wherever you can grab it, acceptance. And at the end of the day, they are my children. And no matter what their decisions in life are, I'm going to love them. And why not let them know that I actually do love them? No matter how we fight, no matter how we fuss, no matter how we disagree, they're my children and I love them. And I think that Ravi just happens to be one of those characters that she's ahead of that. But she's got a lot of dark stuff happening. She had some stuff happening in her past that people don't know about. So, you know, don't judge unless you be judged. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, She got to watch. She lives in a glass house, so she can't throw a lot of rocks.
I want to know where she got all those pens. I'll just put that out there. It's just, you're like, don't ask me about where I got the pens. So
right, that's right. You ask a lot of questions. I think that's why she's like that.
Sadly, we're out of time. I could talk to you all for hours. Not that you want to, but I'd love to. But I want to thank you all for your time. Fat Ham is playing at the Goodman Theater through March 9th, and that is it. I've checked. That's it. It's going to wrap. And goodmantheater.org, theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E, is where you can get tickets. And first of all, break legs, everybody. What a fantastic show this was. What an incredible cast you are. And it's no wonder I walked out as I headed over to the hamburger table on opening night to just say, I just got to talk to these folks because they're just so amazing. So thank you for your time with me. And break legs for the rest of the run. And I'll see you in the next thing y'all do.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Sheldon, give Norm Lewis our best.
We'll do.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.